Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Been a good stretch the last 4 or 5 days or so for Houston professional teams. It continued last night. You know, it's pretty nice when their bats are hot and you can't miss from three. The energy is up. Whether that's sustainable or not, that's a different conversation. But when you knock down shots and you swing the bats well, all's well. And when you have Hunter Brown on the mound, combined with the bats, you're gonna have a good night. The Astros do. They take care of the Red Sox. Jordan continues his domination of that team. I don't know if it's reached a point where Red Sox fans are aware, because there's not an extended amount of this happening in the playoffs like it is for Altuve with the Yankee fans. Like, Yankee fans have a legitimate fear of Altuve in big moments, and rightfully so. But Red Sox fans, I'm sure, have seen the numbers now. Whether the Red Sox broadcast brings it up today for the 1 a.m. start, who can tell? Who will know? But the stats are out there. Jordan dominates the Red Sox. He's, when healthy, one of the best hitters in baseball. Against the Red Sox, we're talking the best player of all time. The numbers are astounding, and that continued last night as it has throughout the series. And Hunter Brown was back to being himself. He didn't give up any runs in that previous start, the first start of the season, but it wasn't economical. That changed. You got the Hunter Brown that has become one of the dominant pitchers in baseball, all because a couple dudes said, hey, you want to throw a sinker? I can't believe when you go back to that moment a couple seasons ago, we were talking about him or wondering about his status, and someone said, hey, buddy, you ever thought about throwing a sinker? And he's taken off since. He's got everything you want. He's healthy. He gets guys out, and he's got the mentality, as Jeff Blum talked about, that with all the departures, the established starters gone, that Hunter Brown was going to take on the role of being not only just the ace in name, but the attitude that comes with it, being the leader of that rotation. And that certainly played out last night. So, feeling pretty good about the Astros to start the year. Good start. You bounce back against the Angels. You've dominated the Red Sox, and now you have a chance to sweep them. They go again at 1:10 first pitch. Crochet versus Burrows. We'll see if Burrows can continue this run and bounce back. We saw the Hunter Brown bounce back. Let's see if Burrows can get his season off to a real start. Look, we'll toss aside start one with the new club. Let's see what you got against the Red Sox, who are trying to avoid getting swept in Houston. As far as the Rockets, for a night, you saw at least what you believe can be their ceiling. The defense was swarming. They knocked down shots. I don't think that's sustainable. Proof says you're not going to be a team who's knocking down over 40% from your threes. But that hot start is one that you can take from and go, hey, You want to play defense at that level. You want to swarm and have the ball movement that you had early in the game. Those are things that can, particularly in the playoffs, because I think energy ebbs and flows depending on the moment in the regular season, whether it's three games or four nights, back-to-back, all those things play a part. But playoffs, when you know you're going to have the day off between every game, that energy on defense early, that can be something that early should be something you can count on night to night. And that leads to early offense, that leads to transition. You're forcing turnovers, you're forcing bad shots. And that's the way they have to play. Because getting stagnant in the half court and depending on KD to knock down difficult shots, while possible, has shown itself to be something that they can't maintain over a four-quarter game against a good basketball team. So what you saw early, pushing the pace, turning the Knicks over, turning long rebounds off of bad shots. And I'm not even just talking about, like, bad misses. You can tell when a team is unbalanced and guys are shooting in spots they shouldn't be shooting in. Like, you can almost look at, depending on who the guy is, where he shot that shot, okay, that's not going in. It's, while they're all, relatively speaking, the best players in the world, they're also playing against the best players in the world. So when you shoot a shot like the Knicks are shooting, just uncomfortable. Even Jalen Brunson was shooting in spots where he doesn't like to shoot. And it doesn't help him that you've got Amen Thompson hounding him throughout the game. Amen Thompson may have to, and that's his role. He may have to be the guy that's always point of attack, and that will depend on who they start. Ime Udoka started Tari Eason. He will start, I believe he said he will start Reed Shepherd in the next game as he still tries to finalize his lineup. When Reed Shepherd's in the game specifically, starting, Amen Thompson has to be your point of attack defender, at least against the other team's best, maybe not best player. It all depends on who's initiating offense, but he has to be the guy because you see what he's capable of in mucking up what a team wants to do when he is the guy who's leading your defense. So he had the assignment of getting after Jalen Brunson, and Jalen Brunson didn't enjoy that very much. Many people don't when they see Amen on them. Jalen Brunson, with that size difference, particularly didn't.
He has to hate the Thompson twins.
He saw a sore in the playoffs last year.
Yeah. This year, too.
He didn't enjoy his times.
It's like you can just pencil in minus 20 plus minus for Jalen Brunson when he plays the Thompson twins. At least, again, this season. In the playoffs, I mean, he still had to work for it.
Yeah, but he made his shots but, to win that series.
You know, he just like, ugh. Long that way. What's with this family?
there's only the two of them. Unfortunately, one's in the East, so he has to see him consistently, and then he has to see the other one twice a year because they both always play.
I think the dad might be able to lock up Jalen Brunson at this point. I think it might just be
a little disrespectful.
I think
it's a little disrespectful what you're doing there. Maybe the dad at 25. Yeah, I don't know about the dad now that can get after Jalen Brunson, but yeah, he is. He's listed at 6'2". No one actually believes he's 6'2". Amen Thompson likely has a 6 to 7 inch height advantage on him, something like that. Even if we give him credit for being 6'2", he's like 5 to 6 inches taller than him, more athletic than him. It's not an enjoyable experience to have that guy after you all game, particularly when you're backcourt. As much as the Knicks have accumulated guys, Bridges is fine. He's not going to initiate offense. You can throw Atari on Bridges and be just fine. So if Amen's going to be the guy who destroys your offense, you put him on Jalen Brunson. And Jalen Brunson, much like the rest of the Knicks, didn't have a good night. 5 of 14, minus 26 in 37 minutes. It's like that LeBron meme when he was in the finals and he was taking free throws and he saw Kawhi coming back in the game. He's got, dang it. That's got to be the case for Jalen Brunson anytime he knows a Thompson twin is after him. And that it played out last night. As I mentioned, the Rockets shooting over 40% from three. They got going early, had a big first quarter. The Knicks bounced back. I think they cut it to four at one point. Yeah. But the Rockets really were never in any danger, particularly in that second half.
Yeah, they went out to like a 10-point lead, or I think it was 12-1, when an NBA team has 1 point, it's always the funniest.
Yeah, it's like 14-1 like or whatever it was.
It's funnier that it's 14-1 like than it is 14-0.
Yeah.
I can't explain why.
You got to the line. The numbers just, like 14-0, wow, they blanked them. But yeah. It means you got to the line, only made one out of two. So your ineptitude knows no bounds. If you got a chance to get two on the board at the free throw line, you still missed the free throw.
Yeah.
And that was early. The Knicks took a 1-0 lead. Well, 1-0 lead.
1-0. Yeah.
And that was the end of that.
Yeah. And basically from that point, they just had a double-digit lead. Like you said, they got up to like 20, and it got closer to like single digits, or in single digits, like 5 or so. And the Rockets just immediately went on another like 15-0 run and just like, okay. Back to 20. Because with these two teams,
runs are part of the game.
Yeah. And I mean, even the fourth quarter, they're up again like 15 in the fourth quarter. I was trying to do the math in my head of like, okay, at what point can I just like not actually turn this game off, but mentally be like, all right,
kind of checked out. Yeah. This one's over. They've got this one.
It took until they actually emptied the benches. Like that, I think the Knicks like intentionally fouled to get subs on the floor with like a minute 48 left. I was like, okay, 12 point lead, a minute 48 left, and all the bench warmers are in. I think
we're safe here.
I think they can handle this. But I mean, it was a couple possessions where I'm like, you don't need to make a shot here. I'd feel a lot better if you did, though.
Yeah, so you talk about the run. The Knicks got within 4 on a Jose Alvarado floater, and then the Rockets at 41-37, that was a score. And then the Rockets ripped off the, as I look at it, the next 15 points.
Yeah, okay. So it was 15.
Excuse me, 11. I'll take that back. It was the next 11 points to go up by 15, excuse me. And then after that, there was it wasn't a game, really. I mean, outside of the fear, the Rockets, like, falling apart, which, of course, it's a healthy fear and a reasonable one to have. The game wasn't anything where the Rockets were in any real danger. Like you said, hey, make a shot or two to make you feel comfortable. But the Knicks weren't ever in it.
And there's a couple times when it was like 111-98.
Think one more three goes down, then we might have some trouble.
In my head, I was like, this is a much closer game. And I was like, oh, wait, no, this is still a 13-point game with 4 minutes left. So I feel okay.
Yeah. Cat Pat tried to have his moments. He was bad early. He got more physical and made a little hay. But other than that, it was a complete domination as they shut down the Knicks' best player. And if you're going to hold Jalen Brunson to the numbers I laid out for you, you got a real shot to win. So the shots went down. The energy on defense was up. We'll hear from Kevin Durant. It was an NBC game, so we'll hear from him. He was on the court talking postgame about Tari Eason, which that's the second consecutive time the Rockets star has big up Tari Eason. So whether it's a conscious decision by the guys to raise Tari up, well, his play the last couple of nights has warranted it. So we'll hear from Kevin Durant when we get back. We can hear from you as well. The number is 713-780-3776. So Astros dominate, Rockets dominate, all good. We'll hear from some of the luminaries as far as the Rockets are concerned. We'll also hear from D'Amico Ryans because he talked at the annual coaches summit, whatever you want to call it, about CJ Stroud. We played some sound from him yesterday talking about David Montgomery. Well, he talked about CJ Stroud, about the plan for that this offseason, because CJ will definitely be locked in this offseason. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans on that. We'll also get into, well, I'll let you determine it, Sean, because there are three clips courtesy of Aaron Wilson, D'Amico Ryans talking about Jerod Johnson. Like he cut it up into three clips. You can listen to him and tell me, did D'Amico Ryans actually say anything? Because he said Jerod Johnson's a great guy, but didn't really give a reason other than sometimes change is needed for why he's no longer with the Texans. Maybe you can decipher if there's anything from this, but all it sounded to me like, hey, I just felt like a move had to be made. Why? I don't know, but maybe you can tell me. So we'll get into some D'Amico Ryan sound at some point, but when we come back, we'll hear from Katie. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
We'll be right back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Let's hear from Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant and the Rockets win. They take care of the Knicks, and they end their losing streak on national television. So it was all great. So as you might imagine, Kevin Durant postgame, people wanted to hear from him. Here is Kevin Durant postgame on NBC.
Tari Eason was key in getting us started and getting us that lead, knocking down shots, just being aggressive on the boards, and we fed off his energy. So, and then they cut the lead to four. I just love how the second unit stayed poised and was able to push the lead back up, and we're gonna need that going forward. That was a playoff type. That's a playoff type team that played with physicality, and I'm glad we matched it.
Then for you, 27 points. You had your own 10-0 run there in the first quarter. You told me today you get so excited every night to play because there's always something you want to fine tune. What'd you like most about your game tonight?
I love how we moved the basketball. I think we had 30 plus assists. Everybody touched it and felt a part of the game. You know, I started off early, but you know, guys didn't try to force me the ball all night. It kind of happened in the Florida offense. So it was a great game. I think me, Twin, Alpi had, I want to say, 30 assists combined almost. And, that's a formula we need to take. We need to involve everybody, and we need to continue to guard up on defense. Holding them under 100 points, that's the type of ball we need to play.
Kevin Durant on NBC after the game. I think the first time I heard him talk about the offense in a way where he was, hey, maybe I shouldn't be taking so much on me was after a loss. I forgot, was it the Laker game? One of the Lakers games where it went poorly for them. He turned the ball over.
I think it was it might have been the second one, honestly.
Where he talked about, hey, maybe I should be in the corner a little bit more. I forgot whatever
where
game
he's like,
that was.
He basically goes like, well, I am the offense.
So now this comes after a win, so it sounds and hits a little bit better, but he is whether openly asking for it in practice or in meetings and film watch or just simply stream of consciousness after game saying, hey, it doesn't need to all be on me. And he has been a proponent of Reed Shepard. He may be Reed Shepard's biggest fan who's not named what's his dad's name? I forgot what the dad's Jeff?
Yeah, Jeff. I was thinking Rex.
Yeah, Rex Chapman.
Yeah, I got him and Rex Chapman.
I think it's Jeff Shepard, the father. He may be, as far as people related to basketball that we know, he may be Reed Shepard's biggest fan the way he's always pushing him forward. So there's sound we may get to about Reed Shepard finding his way with the pick and roll and running the offense. But I think Kevin Durant would like for these guys to assert themselves a little bit more when it comes to the offense and saying, hey, not everything. I don't need to be the bailout. You don't have to give it to me 20 feet away from the basket with 4 seconds left and ask me to create. So if that becomes something that the Rockets can do a little bit more going forward, and that comes with ball movement. And they knock down the shot. So at times, guys are going to be a little bit more willing to shoot and take on some more responsibility because the shots are going down. If the shots aren't going down, I think you will see a reversion to, hey, Kevin, save us. Because it ain't going well for me. You're the best player on this team. Go take shots. Now, he will bring that on. He said, hey, I'm paid to do that. But for the viability of this team, they need to find answers that don't always begin and end with Kevin Durant. You go shoot the ball well. As some people say, go hoopity hoop and go make some shots for us. That can't be the way this team operates in the playoffs. And while it's only been a couple games of shooting the ball well, they beat Memphis, they didn't particularly shoot the ball well from three. Me, maybe others, I won't say this is a trend. I just think it's nice to acknowledge that when you shoot the ball well, things always feel better.
Yeah.
You always feel better about your team.
I mean, when they started the season, whatever it was, like 15-5 or whatever, like they were the best three-point shooting team in the league. Now, they shot not
high volume, but they shot their percentage was
bottom
high.
Three amount, but their percentage, like they're so I do think that there is just some like we talked about Tari's and just like the swoon he was in is a little bit of regression to the mean. This might also just be some like they had a scorching start and they're bad for most of the season. And then they have another, you know, hot streak, and we'll see if it's really a streak. Because, I mean, they're a good three-point shooting team for the first 20 games of the season. This has been two that they've been hot consecutively. So it's not anything to, like, draw, I think, huge long-term. Last night, they made the shots. Like, Kevin Durant in the first quarter, they mentioned it in the clip, 10-0 run by himself. And it's like, yeah, that's just, you know, every one of those shots, I was like, yep, going in. Yep, okay, this offense will work if Kevin Durant makes every shot and the other guys are moving the ball and making all those shots. Like, it's a little bit of the, you know, the Astros offense where it's just like, yeah, you know, when your best player is playing really well and then all the other guys are also playing well, you're going to put up 10 runs every night against the Boston Red Sox. I think we got a little bit of that last night with the Rockets.
So while they have not shot in volume, the last couple of nights they got up over 40, which is not something they normally do. And now the percentages were high, so maybe that led to more shots being taken. But they normally aren't a team in that 40-plus range, and that has been one of the criticisms of the offense. Like, how is this modern basketball? When you're not getting up enough threes, you're relying on offensive rebounding. That is not how you win.
Yeah, it's just like the math problem. You give up the, you know, X amount of attempts, and, you know, therefore that many makes, or however many makes. You're just like if the other team makes 15 threes and you make 5, that you're just down 30 points right there.
It's tough to win games that way.
So the offense being so dependent on the offensive rebound, on, you know, the big, you know, reason why Fred VanVleet is like the missing piece is that he made them a low turnover team, and they're a very high turnover team without him. So it's like we talked about earlier. Now, this is like much more positive tone in the John Granato theory of, like, well, people are just in a better mood because you're winning. It's the, like, yeah, this offense is kind of predicated on, you know, dominating the possession game of, you're not really going to be more efficient. You're just going to get more opportunities, and that's how you're going to score more. And in a game like last night, you don't have to do that because you're making 40% of your threes and shooting 40 of them.
They have the Bucks tonight, a severely depleted Bucks team. We know about Giannis not playing. No Bobby Portis, and Kevin Porter Jr. is out till next season. So
Cam Thomas got waived.
Yeah, Gary Harris isn't available. All things should point to what we saw in New Orleans against the Pelicans. Now, it is the second night of back-to-back, so we'll see where the energy is, but this should be another win, and then you move on. And sticking with that game last night, I didn't know until recently, and by recently I mean like 2 minutes ago, that there was a Josh Hart, Stephen A. Smith battle back and forth. Apparently Josh Hart called out Stephen A. Smith for his fake Nick fandom. That has been a running thing for Nick fans, not just Josh Hart, that they either don't want Stephen A. Smith attached to them, or they don't believe he's a real Nick fan, despite his assertions to the contrary. Well, thanks to the Rockets, Stephen A. was able to clap back at Josh Hart, saying the Knicks wet the bed against any team with kind of a pulse. So I haven't been keeping a track of the Knicks in that way. I know they're a good basketball team, going to be a top 4 seed in the West, have home court through the first round. So apparently this is what the Knicks do. I have to go look back at their recent run. Maybe they just don't play well. Have they not played well against a good team since the Rockets lost to them?
Yeah.
Is that the run?
That was a month ago. It's not that long ago.
I mean, maybe. Maybe he's just being hyperbolic when he says they wet the bed against good teams.
Or maybe he doesn't actually follow the Knicks that closely.
Because he's not a fan.
Fake Nick fan.
So the Knicks lost to the Thunder and the Hornets. And the Hornets aren't record-wise a good team, but for the last 2 months they've played good basketball, so now you would throw them in that category. So that is 3 losses in a row against teams who are either considered good or have been playing well.
And then before that, it's like a lot of wins
against bad teams. Yeah, and the Clippers they lost. The Clippers are legitimately, they're not good, but they have, of course, we know they have played better since their start. Yeah, Lakers lost. They did. The last time they beat a good team wasn't the Rockets. It was the Nuggets in Denver.
40.
Now, did the And they had Jokic, so can't even use that as an excuse. And the Knicks beat him by 39 points in Denver with Jokic on the floor.
Yeah, and then a week before that, they beat the Spurs. Like,
so it's been a recent run of not beating good teams. They haven't
last three times.
Yeah, I mean, if you want, and give the Lakers four, if you want to get the Clippers, whatever, an average team. So, I mean, they have had success, but the last maybe 3 weeks or so, it hasn't gone that great. So, okay, that's but fine. Fine.
I will say, and this it was like some of it is just the game I watched last night and like the tone of the halftime and post game show from the studio crew, where I was like, I'm not sure if I buy the Knicks or the Knicks. I feel like they have like the wrong starting lineup, and I'm not sure who I'm taking out and who I'm putting in, but like, they immediately became a more competitive game with Mitchell Robinson out there. And like, can you bench Mikal Bridges? Like, can the Knicks, like, I guess,
do they want to see a million stories over five first round picks for a guy who can't even start for you?
That's why, where I'm like, I think they should just start Deuce McBride with the starters. You could talk me into Mitchell Robinson, just go double pick, but
it's very difficult when he was supposed to be the missing piece to what you wanted to do.
Like, Josh Hart, I kind of get why he has to start, even though, like, he's, like, one of those it's amazing. He should be a Rocket because he's, like, such a funky, weird piece. But it's also, like, no, he's good. But, like, can he shoot? No, not really. Can he drive to the basket? No, not really. Like, what does he exactly do? Just plays really hard, man. I think they do need that, but I don't know. I came away not enthused by the Knicks. Like, I don't think they can come out of the East. Really.
So they acquired Mikal Bridges for all those picks, played a season with him, and then the next year they acquired Kat. So they have done a lot over the last couple seasons to change their trajectory and just the composition of the roster.
Trade for Ananobi.
They did a lot and when they knew they had a guy with Jalen Brunson, they did plenty to make sure he was supported. And you know what? In a year where the Celtics didn't have Jason Tatum, they were still better than the Knicks.
I kind of think they missed their window. And they beat the Celtics in the playoffs. Whatever,
yeah, they were up 3. They were going to go up 3-1 when the Achilles injury happened. So they were the better team that series. And then they lost to the Pacers. And now the Pistons are better. We'll see the status of Cade Cunningham. And the Celtics are better. They're going to manage Jason Tatum until the playoffs.
I kind of think the Celtics are going to win the East. like as we talk through it, like, because you have the Knicks third, fourth, you have the Cavs, fifth, the Hawks. Like, it's just not a lot to, like, believe in as far as, like, three rounds of playoffs. Like, obviously someone's got to do it. Last year was the Pacers, and the Pacers were playing super well. We saw it when they played in the finals and forced a game 7. But, like, yeah, maybe the Knicks can come out of the East. I've circled all the way back around to
we're one injury away from and we already got the Cade collapse.
Yeah,
lung.
If Cade doesn't come back. If
Jason Tatum can't be what he was, and he's playing, but he's severely limited compared to what he has been, then we can see what appears to be a Celtics run to the finals flip the other way.
I guess I can't see a world where the Knicks are competitive in the finals. Like, I can't see
against the Western Conference
game, where they lose in like 6 respectable games.
I would agree. I don't really see that for them, but
they can definitely win the East, as I've talked it out.
Yeah, now you're back.
Yeah, just, like the Pistons, I mean, they could be staring down the barrel of a Hornets Pistons round one. I'm not saying I'll pick the Hornets. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a big game 5.
Like,
if the thought of
LaMelo Ball winning a game 5 in Detroit to send it back to Charlotte up 3-2, while I can't even imagine it, if it happened, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, their best player has a collapsed
this
lung.
This is what I'm saying.
Collapsed.
Like, they have been able to stay competitive, certainly. I think they just smacked around the Raptors who are heavily in the playoff mix, so without Cade.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they did that last night. So they still have some juice waiting on Cade to come back. But LaMelo, even if Cade is back, like Con Knipple and Diabate and LaMelo leading the Hornets to a big win on the road in game 5, who's to say?
Like, I can't rule it out. you know, in a 1-8 matchup, you would like there's not a 1-8 matchup in the West that I'm like, oh, be careful, Thunder.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
The Pistons, because they're so Cade dependent and Cade's hurt right now, although they, you know, they have played decently well without him, but I don't know. The East is fascinating to me because I think there's more, like, you can just talk yourself into so much more with these teams than in the West, where it feels like it's two, they're like one of the top two are going to make it out, and the rest are just kind of like fighting to not go out sad.
Yeah, and can one of them give one of those two a real series is what we're at right now. We got a World Cup question we'll get to when we come back. Not a great couple of games for the U.S. national team. They got beat by Portugal last night. And I was trying to compare, because there's a lot of former players in the media space talking about this team in this cycle, and you might imagine they weren't thrilled with what happened. And I was trying to compare it to the NBA, because it's, I know the NFL has it, Major League Baseball has it, but it feels like it's more prominent that former players in the NBA are talking about the game. So while these players are less famous, they are talking about the national team as opposed to an individual team or league in and of itself. And these guys played for the national team, and they have responded in that way, whether it be DeMarcus Beasley saying he was uninspired, or guys like Charlie Davies and Jimmy Conrad and others, Tony Miola, they do a show together, and they were pointing out the lack of tactics and the players simply being unaware. Hercules Gomez, it was a lot of the guys who we saw during a time where U.S. soccer was a scrappy underdog. Now they're just the unlikable underdog, I guess, for a lot of these
players.
For
me, I just feel like they're really equal.
There it is, Tim Weah. I love the quote for the show. It's just not great when you've just got beat a combined 7-2 in your two last warm-up games before you pick a roster for the World Cup. Not great. They did play good squads, but they looked like doo-doo. Keith, you got a World Cup question. Anyone else got a question about anything? You can ask that when we get back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So we're having a discussion during the break about the U.S. soccer media, and it's full of guys who play for the national team. So they certainly have their perspective. A lot of it comes into pride of the badge and being hard to play against. It's because that's what they were. They weren't a team that could play through you to score a goal. They did it on the counter, and America was tryhards, and they would like America to get back to that, because there has been a transition to under Berhalter, no longer the manager, and Pochettino. Hey, we're talented enough to play with you, because we've got guys who play in the best leagues in the world. That has not shown itself against Europe. There's now a long losing streak for Pochettino against teams from Europe, and that continued in the last couple games where they got smacked around by Belgium and Portugal, and not good feelings about the team. And the guys who you would say laid the foundation for at least being respectable are having their say, and it didn't help last night where you gave up a soft goal where you left João Felix alone at the top of the box, or he could take a touch and then score. So all things not going well. You know what's not a great time to drop something? Like the USMNT, their official account dropped, hey, we got a doc about the last 4 years leading up to the World Cup. You want to watch it? They dropped that announcement this morning. Not a good time for it. Not a good time to tell people you've got a doc coming up about how you guys got prepared for these 4 years.
Unless,
or the last 4 years.
Unless it's like the Firefest doc, which I don't think it will.
Are they going to break down all the things that happened between Reyna and Berhalter and the Federation? Unlikely.
I doubt it.
Unlikely.
Don't think into that.
So with that, let's go to Keith. He's got a World Cup question. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys. Obviously disappointing the U.S. finishes in some of these warm-up matches before the World Cup, but
if you look at their group, you know, it's 48 teams. You know, they're still ranked higher than Paraguay, Australia, and Turkey. So that's a good sign in terms of getting out of group play at least. I think kind of the bar for U.S. soccer is just, you know, getting out of group play, maybe surviving one round of the knockout stage. I do think we need, you know, some more talent, obviously, in U.S. soccer. You know, I saw a stat yesterday, Dell. Christian Pulisic hasn't scored a goal for Team USA in almost 2 years, which is kind of crazy. And then also, second question or comment is, 48-team World Cup, and Italy's got 60 million in terms of population, and they can't qualify for the World Cup, yet they made the Final Four in the World Baseball Classic, but they can't put together a World Cup team with that large of a country, 60 million people, and I think that's what, 3 straight World Cups they haven't qualified? Seems kind of ridiculous, right?
Let's start with your first comments on the team. Yeah, disappointing. These warm-up games, some of the commentary was, why are you switching so much? Like, he had a different lineup, Pochettino did, where he had 6 changes in the starting lineup for a team who doesn't have a lot of cohesiveness. Why are you making all these changes, putting guys who have rarely played together in your last match before you're actually going to step on? Like, they'll have some behind-closed-door stuff where we might find out the result afterwards in the lead-up, so they won't just stop playing soccer together. But for games that are going to be broadcast on television that we all get our eyes on, that was the last one. So questions about the coach's tactics and lineups. Aside, there is a lack of talent, and Pulisic, however you want to say it, is one of those guys who has played really well for his club. It's that classic thing where he can be great for his club. While he has been the standard bearer for the country for a while, these last 18 months, as Keith mentioned, not a goal scored. So a lot of question marks, not a lot of solid answers. We're just going to have to go into the World Cup and hope and see. You mentioned the group. Well, you laid out how they rank higher than all these teams, but let's remember, they don't beat teams from Europe, and Turkey happens to reside in Europe. So Turkey, the last team to qualify for the group, they did that in the last couple of days. Don't just take that as something you think is going to happen.
Yeah.
Until proven otherwise, they don't beat teams from Europe under Pochettino. So Turkey could give them some problems, and considering they likely will. We know how this is going to play out. I've said it before. It's going to play out where either they'll split the first two as far as points. They'll get a win, and they'll tie. And for whatever reason, it'll come down to the final game match, and they have to score a goal or have to win to get through. This is how it's been. This is how it feels like it'll always be. And for the most part, they do make it happen. It's never comfortable. They never just get out 2-0 and coast. It's from Algeria back in 2010 to last year when Christian Pulisic nearly ended his chances of having children, or not last year, last tournament, ended his chances of having children. It always feels like they're hanging on by the smallest of threads to get into the groups, get through the group stage. I imagine it'll be that way again. Just get ready for it. Get ready for being pretty excited about your performance game one, having a relatively disappointing game two, and then hoping and praying you get the result in game three.
And again, credit to them for not even, you know, giving people outsized expectations for this World Cup.
It's low.
People's expectations are about in line with, like, all right, just, you know.
Hopefully don't embarrass us.
Get out of the group, maybe.
Maybe win a game.
Sneak one.
Yeah, and we'll see. There's not a lot of expectations. Keith talked about the expanded field in Italy. 10 teams from Africa get in. They had the playoffs, which was teams from different portions of the world in these one-game playoffs the last couple of days, and 10 teams from the continent of Africa get in, and Italy does not. Population aside, I was listening to someone talk about Italy. The best players in the Italian league aren't Italian.
Yeah.
That's a problem. When you have all these players having good seasons, and you start looking at the country of origin, not Italian, not Italian, not Italian. So while we know here we've talked about development being an issue for the U.S., that's going on in Italy right now. And I forgot his name, but he was discussing how Germany had their reboot under Klinsmann. And they went from a country who was behind the times to having everyone invested. Like, even the clubs themselves were investing in the German soccer machine to make sure they got back on top, because it was embarrassing for the country to be where they were as far as global soccer. And it wound up in one of the more embarrassing moments in Brazilian history, where where Germany beats them on their home field in the semifinal 7-1, and then eventually beats Argentina to win the World Cup. So it worked out for Germany. Italy may have to go through the same thing. The U.S. will never have that type of investment. We just have to hope and pray that they put the right people in charge to at least get us past the point where we're hoping to get out of the group stage. I have my doubts. It's been years of we're up next, and we're never getting there. Yeah. And meanwhile, we look. I don't think they're situated, like, if you look across the aisle, but the women, outside of a small little dip in the last World Cup, dominate. I don't know why that's the case, why they've been able to figure it out in a way while the rest of the world has to catch up to them. The U.S. men have been trying this for a lot longer, and are like the rest of the world is closer to the U.S. women than the U.S. men are closer to the best in the world by a large margin, actually.
Yes, like the top three in women's soccer are all like relatively close to each other. The USA men are like nowhere. They're not really that close to like the second rung.
Despite what the FIFA rankings may say, and Keith laid it out, they're not even like a tier two team.
Yeah.
In the world, if you have a good night against Ecuador, you can win a game, or not Panama. Never Panama, but Paraguay or Japan, that was part of their 5-game unbeaten run. That could happen. Japan's played pretty well in their lead up to the World Cup. But when we start to talk about the big boys, not even a contest. And it's not even just like talent. They just do dumb stuff, like basic things that if you just took care of that and cleaned that up, at least you'd be in the game. Some of the goals they give up are so soft, and that you have to hope changes. At least give yourself a chance.
So on FanDuel, the odds to win the next World Cup, or to win this World Cup, the USA is like, what, like 13th, it looks like, on here?
13th?
But like, even like Belgium, who's 10th? Like,
so far ahead. We just saw it.
Yeah, I don't, like, what are we talking about? Like, they're 10th.
They're 10th, and look how much better they are.
Netherlands, who they lost to last World Cup, is 8th. Like, Portugal is 7th. Like, I'm talking about, where they're that not feels, close this to, feel, like,
I would mention women's sports. That feels like women's basketball. Like even the 10th, of course, we know about the top teams, Duke and UConn and South Carolina, where you could talk about a team in the Sweet 16 against one, like the 1-4 in women's basketball, and you see the difference in the score. That's what it's like for the U.S. Yeah, you could. Yeah, you're the 13th best odds, probably boosted by being in your home country, but you're not close.
Yeah, Mexico's the team right below you.
A lot of that has to do with the country, the playing games at home. Yeah. All right, we'll go to break with that. When we come back, I was going to do the whole, we'll talk a different football. But we'll just talk about the Texans when we come back. D'Amico Ryans was available to the media. He answered some questions about his quarterback and the guy who was coaching his quarterback. We'll get to those when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
I didn't need a plumber for years and years and years, but when I did, I called Aqueduct Plumbing Company. They have been helping 97.5 listeners for years. I can recommend them with confidence for emergency service calls and all jobs like a repipe.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE, and I'm Jimmy Uso. Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and answer for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No.